Paul Andrews and the Kent Business Bunker on Channel Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on bizradio.co.uk and channelradio.co.uk on this Tuesday, June the 13th. We meet Paul Andrews and the famous Jed Dodds.
Yes, I hope they've got more ZC Lives coming up because we've promoted it twice now and you said it was last Friday.
Yeah, that's true.
They do them every so often, though, don't they? So I'm sure you.
They run them all the time. I had a few problems with that little sequence of things because none of you were listening, and partway through that, somehow or another, there was a small interview with somebody else from a few weeks ago that found its way into that. So, yeah.
Oh, hopefully the listeners weren't listening either. They weren't.
The reason we do all that is because everybody goes for a cup of tea then. So
yeah,
you know,
exactly. So
which is why there's not a soul on my. On my Twitter feed that has noticed that. So, yeah, there you
That's
go.
All right, then.
Yeah. So you can kick off with an email or a tweet. I don't
okay,
mind which.
So many may know that Keith and Kate, this is from Athelbray.
Athelbray.
Well done, Paul, you've pronounced
They're
it
They're from
right.
Athelbray,
yeah,
are they?
They are.
Athelbray, Keith and Kate.
They take part in the Eastbourne annual 24-hour relay walk for cancer research. And this year's event is on the 1st and 2nd of July. And it's looming fast, and they're delighted and grateful that the McLaren Formula One team have provided them with an exclusive signed photograph of Jenson Button and Fernando Alonso. With Jenson now having retired from racing, it's going to be limited edition and has been specifically offered for Eastbourne Cancer Research Relay. The photo comes with a letter of authenticity from McLaren. So if you know any Formula One fan who would cherish it, they're taking bids via email, Twitter and Facebook. The reserve is £25. And in the 4 weeks in the run up to the walk, they'll provide the latest bid on a daily basis, but they won't say who the bidder is. But the winner will be announced after the end of the walk at 9 on the 2nd of July, and then they'll arrange delivery to whoever the successful bidder is. So if you want to submit a bid, either email Kate at athelbrae.co.uk, that's A-T-H-E-L-B-R-A-E, or tweet them at athelbrae.ltd or message their Facebook page, which is facebook.com/athelbrae.ltd.
Fantastic, thank you. It's that time again. They've asked for a shout out. Slope Off Friday,
who are already fully booked almost by the sound of it.
Yeah.
24 hours
Friday lunch at A La Turca, 61 Central Parade, Herne Bray, 2 p.m.
Herne Bray. 2 p.m.
That's a laugh, isn't it? Slope Off Friday, 2 a.m. more like.
Right.
They go to lunch. They go to lunch. Listen, Jules and her crew go to this networking lunch. Lunch, I'll have you know. Mm-hmm. 2 a.m. I get a text. Hello. We just ordered the port. I said, you're at lunch. Yeah, we've nearly finished. So if you like indulging in reprobate activities on a Friday, I suggest you get yourself booked on Slope Off Friday. It's good fun, apparently. I've never been myself, but there you go. And we've also had a tweet from Andrew Knott, who's one of the protagonists behind Slope Off Friday. Andrew is the membership coordinator for the Federation of Small Business. And he says, afternoon, Paul, could you give us a shout out for the Federation of Small Business if you're interested in finding out more about the membership, membership details and membership benefits, then do get in touch with Andrew. His Twitter handle is aknott20. That's AKNOTT20. Do give him a follow on the Twitter.
Denise has sent a Poldark tweet. I'm really tempted to press the button.
For any particular reason?
I don't know. He has a bare chest, so I'm assuming maybe something
needs
to
no
do
reason.
With that.
Needs no, no reason.
But I want to know what happens when I press the button, but obviously I'm radio, so I probably don't want to do
we
that.
We can look
I?
In a minute, Joe. Yes, it'll be we'll fine. Is it a nice one of Aidan Turner?
Is that who Paul Duck is? Yeah, he looks good.
Yeah, very nice.
I used to like the old one when I was about 5.
No idea.
So, Gemma Fairclough-Haynes says she's enjoying the interview on worker status. So she did listen and she wasn't going to say anything. That must be the one that you've just played by accident, because I don't recall us talking about worker status here. No. So thank you for letting us know you weren't making a cup of tea, Gemma. And whilst you're on the subject, I've got an announcement here about your courses.
Well,
nice
isn't
little
that,
segue, eh?
Isn't that a nice little segue that you've pulled off there, Joe?
So,
this show isn't just thrown together, you know.
Are you a manager who'd like to feel confident managing staff? Whether you're new to managing people or would like a refresher, this course, HR course for non-HR managers will be a benefit for you. So as an employer, the worry of an employee suing you can be one of your biggest concerns. great leadership results in a great team, and this course is designed to give managers confidence and peace of mind in managing staff. So the course is covering things like interviewing and selecting the right people, understanding the importance of documentation, employment law, absence management, equality, diversity, and avoiding discrimination. And you release a key person for your business for a, no, it's saying you releasing a key person for your business for a whole week can be tough. So the whole course is hosted one day a month over 5 months, so that you can also put into practice what you've learnt and come back the following month and ask questions and give feedback, I guess. Course dates are the 3rd of July, 7th of August, little Dodsy's birthday, 4th of September.
Happy birthday, Dodsy. What's she, 11?
She'll be 11, yeah. 4th of September, 2nd of October, big Dodsy's birthday.
Happy birthday, Simon.
He'll be
12.
And the 6th of November, and it's 10 till 3 every day, and the venue will be in the Regis offices in Kings Hill. It's £249 a month, including lunch, and if you want to find out more and book, you can email Gemma at info@orchardemploymentlaw.co.uk, or you can go to Eventbrite as well. And I thoroughly recommend Gemma.
Fantastic.
She's good, isn't she?
She is very good.
She's talking about, and she did one of those biz diaries thing last time.
Absolutely.
She was very good.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a tweet from iNutrition, and they say, Vanilla Web, great show so far. Can I have a shout-out, please? Not for iNutrition, but to Rachel and Andrew from Just So Clothing for my new T-shirts. That's lovely, isn't it?
I've got one of their mats for my my coffee on my desk that I got from the last Grow Kent, and it's like a sewn one. So
crocheted.
So when when your coffee leaks, and then your
mat
sticks
up
to the bottom of your cup, and you lift it up, and it all falls over, and it's all a bit annoying. This doesn't happen because it's cloth. It's really cool.
Let's hear it for crocheted coffee coasters.
They're technically not crocheted, just to be clear, but
No, they are now. As far as I'm concerned, they're crochets, mate. That's it. Do you know what? I want to introduce our next guest, because it's an absolute pleasure to welcome to the Business Bunker Show for the very first time, Mr. Leon Steer of Abbeyfield Kent. I do kind of make a mess of the name of your organisation quite often by getting it out of sequence. So why don't you tell us what it actually officially is?
It is the Abbeyfield Kent Society,
yeah.
And I'm absolutely delighted to be on the show this afternoon, Paul. Thank you very much.
Now, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome you on. As I was saying earlier, I had the pleasure of coming over to you guys one afternoon a few months ago and hearing all about the history of your organisation, plus your fantastic plans, and I was just blown away with some of the stuff you're doing. We haven't got the hours that we spent talking about it then, but we'd love to hear an overview of a bit of background to Abbeyfield Kent, and then also what you have in the pipeline, because there's some really good projects coming on.
Sure. Okay. I'll try and be as quick as I can. Started 1967. It's our 50th this year.
Wow.
And quite interestingly, recently I met two of the founding trustees that started the very first house that we had, which was a small terraced house in Kingswood Road in Gillingham.
Right.
And they brought that house for £4,000.
It's amazing, isn't it?
They secured their own properties on it. Mm. So as volunteers, they knew if it went wrong, potentially their properties were going to be repossessed. So it was a big gamble for them.
Mm.
And that continued from 67, and then the charity in Medway.
Sorry to interrupt. I don't want to interrupt you too much, Leon, because it's a fascinating story. But that first house in Gillingham, what was the idea behind that house?
The house was traditionally known as a sheltered house, so there was no personal care given there. They had about six older people living there. They provided a meal and companionship. So it wasn't a care home or anything of that nature.
Right.
It was, as we would traditionally know it now, as a sheltered scheme
where
people lived together.
But where did it come from? Was it their parents or people they knew?
No. The Abbeyfield movement was started by a guy called Richard Carr Gomme. He left the military in 1956. He was walking down the streets of South Bermondsey, and he saw a lot of lonely older people looking out the windows. Mm. And he was concerned about that, so he brought the very first Abbeyfield house in Eugenia Road with his military gratuity. He was the housekeeper. He'd done all the housework. He'd done all the cooking and the cleaning, etc. And they had their committee meetings in Abbeyfield Road, and that's still there today. And it grew across the UK, and now it's in 13 countries throughout the world. And Abbeyfield looks after over 9,000 older people now across the UK. So one guy walking down the streets of South Bermondsey, that one person in a group. Now, we're a bit like Age UK. We're all registered charities. We have our own registered charity number. We have our own company number. And we stand and fall by our own decisions. So our first house, as I say, was 67, and that was in Medway. And the charity grew. And then in 1992, they built a care home in Wigmore in Medway, and that's a 42 bedded care home. So as Abbeyfields go, we were quite big then. And then in 1999, myself and two other directors got brought into the company because the guy who was the chief executive at that time wanted to buy some more care homes, and Kent County Council was selling their care homes at that time. And we went from a charity employing about 60 people with an annual turnover of 650k overnight to a charity employing over 420 people with a turnover of 9.2 million.
Wow.
We used to pay the salaries in the first year. We had no money left in the bank.
Right.
So we became the largest Abbeyfield, and we still are, in the world.
Right.
And I came into post as CEO in 2007 with a mandate to modernise and update the portfolio. So we're taking a lot of these older properties and replacing them. And we've got a £42 million development programme here in Kent.
£42 million.
We've just opened a 101-bed care home down in Tunbridge. It's like a small hospital. It's called Barnes Lodge. And then on the site next to it, we're building 59 apartments with care. So you can only come if you've got a care need.
This is something I want to talk to you about, because we had a fascinating conversation about this. And Joe and I were talking about such things on an earlier show today about the rate of change. And one of the things, interestingly, in your field of operation, looking after older people, is there's been a real change in the way that we do that.
Yeah.
And your strategy going forward is slightly different to what a lot of people imagine it is when you talk about care homes.
Yeah.
Perhaps you'd like to expand on that.
Well, we hear a lot on the radio and in the newspaper about delayed discharges, or bed blocking, as people call it. The hospitals prefer to call it delayed discharges. There's another problem in this country, and it's called... it's kind of house blocking, because here in Kent, most of the areas of Kent, over 20% of the population are over 65. And every night we go to bed and get up the next day, that number will have increased. And that will happen every day, every evening, every morning, until 2050. It's not going to get any smaller. It's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So the population's aging. Housing stock is small. So people think we need more care homes. We don't. We don't need that many more care homes, because people now come into care homes really at the very end of their journey in life. And everyone who lives in our care homes have got often complex conditions. And
things like dementia and Parkinson's,
life-limiting conditions.
Yeah, yeah.
And the average stay with us is about 2 years.
Right.
The other proportion of older people who want to move out of their homes want to downsize into retirement accommodation. And 54% of older people in this country want to downsize. But only 2.8% of all the planning applications that go through the planning system here in the UK is for retirement accommodation.
Really?
So we've got a huge shortage. So as we move forward, as I mentioned, we've just opened that £10 million development down in Tunbridge, and then we're building these retirement apartments next door. It's going to be a 4-acre retirement complex, the only one in Kent I know of. And in the apartments, the model of that is based on the fact that people coming in there are on benefits. So it's not a private scheme where people buy the apartments. These are for people essentially on housing benefits.
Right.
They can part buy some of them. The development we're doing in Larkfield, 74 apartments we're building there, we set 20 of those apartments aside for veterans, for people without money. Because in 2011, I read an article that said that 38% of older veterans in this country are living below the poverty line. And I thought, that's not much of a reward for people who fought for our freedom.
Absolutely.
So I spoke to various people in Kent, hooked up with Lord Delisle, the Lord Lieutenant of Kent, Simon Weston, and one or two others. And we've We're in the course of raising $2.8 million to set these 20 apartments aside purely for veterans. Mm. And we've got a service at Canterbury Cathedral on the 10th of October when we've got Invictus Choir coming down to celebrate this work, celebrate our 50th. Right. We've got another development in Waltringbury. That's Judith Starr's site in September. That's 51 apartments. And on the drawing board, we've got another development in Kent. But the difference is we're helping people who are not financially fortunate. Mm. So whilst we've got some for sale, some are part sale, the 235 apartments that we're building over the next 4 years, the vast majority of those are for people who are on benefits or want to part by.
Sure.
So
presumably that will have a knock-on effect on accommodation that's owned by the council and that sort of thing as well, because that bedroom tax was all about people not moving out of bigger houses, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So,
well, the bedroom tax doesn't affect the over 65s.
But the people in the houses that don't want to go anywhere, there is somewhere to go now.
There is, and that's absolutely right. The first one of these we opened in 2011 was 56 apartments. Not all 56 came out of family housing, but quite a number of them did, and that freed up family housing. Mm. So often when we're doing planning applications here in the county, people say, oh, you're doing this to help older people. Well, actually, we're helping families, because you probably know here in Kent and Medway, over 20,000 people are on the housing waiting list. Mm. The vast majority of those are families. Mm. And older people sometimes don't want to stay in their accommodation, but they don't need to go into a care home.
Yeah.
They need somewhere else to go to.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're building.
And that's what really fascinated me about this. And the little vignette just between you two then also is instructive in this, isn't it? Because nothing happens in isolation. There's cause and effects for everything.
Yeah.
If you start moving something, then everything moves. Yeah. And all of a sudden you change things. You know, it's like people talking about young people not being able to get onto the housing ladder and then saying, well, we need to build more houses. But it isn't just a question of building more houses. You have to build the right types of things.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's where we've been going wrong, because planning rules have been saying, oh, you can't build that there. You have to build one of those there. But it's not necessarily what we need.
You're absolutely right. And those 54% of the older population who do want to downsize, if half of those were able to downsize, it would free up £358 billion worth of housing. Mm. Most of it will be family housing.
Yeah.
So whilst you see fields being ploughed up with more family housing going up, if you build retirement apartments, you need less space. It's a low impact on the environment, and it will free up family housing. Mm. So it's a huge, huge challenge. Mm. And the 235 we're building between now and 2021 is a drop in the ocean.
Mm.
We can't keep pace with the ageing population. Mm. And it's nothing new, because I was learning about the ageing population back in the 70s when I was at school.
Mm.
And that was 1946 to 1964. So we've had 70 years to plan for it.
Mm.
And now it's with us.
And nobody's done anything.
Also,
as the baby boomers move through and you get the people who are having to work longer that don't have such good pensions and that sort of stuff, that would be really
exactly
an opportunity for those people as
If you look at the planning applications going through for developments for older people, the vast majority of them are private developments for people who want to purchase, and there's a market for that. I'm not knocking that, but there are a lot of older people and not financially blessed, and it's those people we're watching out for here in Kent.
Absolutely.
And we've got many more developments that we're looking at beyond 2021.
Can I just ask you very briefly, because we don't like talking about the dirty side of this, but let's talk about this. How are you financing this? Because you've got lots and lots of big projects on the go and loads of money involved and tied up in this. So how's that happening?
Well, because we're a registered housing association, we only specialise in accommodation for older people. So we can apply for housing grant.
Yeah.
And we've been securing grant on these developments so they can become affordable schemes. Mm. So by receiving grant from the Homes and Community Agency, which is the government's housing investment arm, we can keep the rents down.
Mm.
But the shared ownership ones does enable people to buy an equity in the apartments, which is fantastic. So that's where some of our funding is coming from. The rest of it is straight bank funding from a Dutch bank, actually.
Can I ask you this? So I don't want to go into this too much, so I don't want to take up too much time, but it doesn't actually affect me, but because of where I recently lost my dad, a couple of weeks ago, and so I'm looking at loads of this kind of stuff at the moment with my mum and talking about where she lives and stuff like that. She's fine where she is. She only has a small bungalow now, so she's okay. But if you move into a shared housing like that and you have part equity and then you pass away, presumably you can't just give that to a relative in terms of, you know, they can't move in because it's for old people only.
Yeah.
So what happens?
That's one of the conditions. You've got to be over 55 and you must have a care need.
Yeah. So you're all right.
I was fine already. I was fine already, mate. When Leon was talking about the rating over 30, over 65s, I thought he'd been looking at my internet dating stream, mate. That's what I thought.
One of the things we pride ourselves on is if you purchase or part purchase a property with us, when you go to sell it, all of that goes to your estate or whoever you've decided to leave that money to. So we are aware that most people come to us to live out their days with us, and we want to make sure that there's no hidden conditions. So that's something we pride ourselves on, is that they can come in and live with us, and any equity in the property is sold and is passed on to those people they want it passed on to. So that's the only condition. But as I've described, because the population's aging fairly rapidly, I think the demand's going to be there. And certainly some parts of Kent, in the next 10 years, over a quarter of the population will be over 65.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
It's placing enormous pressures. And it creates other difficulties as well, which people often don't think about. It's the more older people that live in the broader community, which is good, and we support that. That's more car movement of domiciliary carers are going to move around villages and other areas delivering care. So bringing older people together who want to live together, it reduces car movements as well. And these sort of things people don't think about. And if you've got an ageing population, particularly in a village, it can see the end of a school because if the family's not moving in. So again, making provision for older people frees up family housing and again enables new families to move in and populate schools and other services.
Yep.
So it's a huge thing that certainly over the next sort of 35 years, I think, isn't going to get any smaller.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And the work that you guys are doing is absolutely fabulous. You've got so many important projects on the go.
It really is. It's so gratifying. I was at one of our schemes in December. I was talking to one of the people that lived there, and I said to her, "What brought you to this scheme?" And she said to me, "Do you know something? I woke up one morning." She said, "My back door was a pile of timber on my kitchen floor." She said, "I've been burgled." Imagine how I felt like when I went to bed that night and the night after and the night after that. I could barely sleep. I was terrified. And I said to her, "How do you feel now that you live at Watling Call?" And she smiled and her face lit up and she said, "I've got my life back."
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the difference. But that's what we're doing.
And just like your comment with veterans, you know, these are people that have worked a lifetime, contributed to society in all kinds of ways. You know, we need to take more care of them, really, don't we?
We certainly do. And we've got a number of older people. We had a lady living with us, one of our homes in Gravesend. She was one of the first police women in this country. And our annual report a year ago, and I know we commented, Paul, on our current annual report, which is a tablet. But our one last year was a book, and it was entitled We Weren't Born Old. Because some people think that older people have been older their life, but they haven't. They've been children and they've been adults. And we've got a lady who's a resident in our home in Canterbury, she nursed Douglas Bader when he had his legs removed.
Wow.
We've got a lady, she's passed away now. She's one of Winston Churchill's secretaries. These people's history is absolutely fascinating, but they feel forgotten, some of them, because people feel, well, that's that they've done their bit now. Well, they haven't. There's still a lot more they can give. I came across a lady in one of our homes a couple of years ago, 85, could still do the splits. She'd been a gymnast.
How did that come up in conversation?
I told you, he's been reading my...
She'd been a gymnast all her life.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
And when I went to her room, she had trophies and medals that she'd done. Their history is absolutely fascinating. Yeah. And it's a big part of the Kent history is amongst these people. So it is gratifying. It's really, really rewarding. And only yesterday, actually, I got an email from some family members because their mum had passed away with us. And just knowing we made a difference in their life as that final part of their journey is really, really rewarding.
I've got an idea for you. I think you should do a, like the business diaries, I think you should do a storytelling event.
It's interesting you said that, because there are so many stories. Absolutely. There's loads. We've got World War II fighter pilots. We've got all sorts of people that live with us.
Let's do it.
Kentish people, you know, and they're coming to the end of their life, and we're keen to capture most of that as we're able to.
You could do a radio show on here. You could go and interview people, and then it would be I'd love to.
Our PR team does pick up a lot of these stories when they come. We've got professional footballers with us. And of course, aging.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Doesn't discriminate.
We could have a field day in there. What we ought to do is maybe go into one of the homes with some microphones and record interviews with people.
Stories.
And get their life stories, because they're fascinating, aren't they?
Really
I'm a trustee at AGK, and there was a cafe in Hythe, right on Oaklands, if anyone's ever in Hythe, and you sit there and you could just hear them, and they're going, oh, yeah, that time when we blah, 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 and you get the whole story, and you could just sit there and have a cup of tea and while away.
I always used to say about my gran, my gran's memory was going towards the end of her life, but she could always remember whether she had peas or carrots for tea in 1948, you know.
No, it's interesting. A few weeks ago, I was at a 50th celebration at one of our homes near Sevenoaks, and I was talking to a chap there, and he was involved in some of the design work for Concord.
Wow.
Fascinating story again, but very humble about it. So, you know, we owe these people a lot, and certainly those veterans, most definitely.
We could talk about this forever. Sadly, we've run out of time, Leon. Thank you so much for that.
Pleasure.
We really must follow up on this again, because there's just so much to talk about.
Yeah.
But for the moment, thank you so much. If people want to find out more about Abbeyfield Kent, what's your website address?
It's the three W's, Abbeyfield Kent.
There's a link to it on the Cambridge Radio website you can find out there.
Yes.
Do check out the projects that they're doing. Do look at the fantastic work they are doing for our old people, our veterans and everyone else. For the moment, Leon, thank you so much for joining us. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
We're doing a couple of more shout outs and then we're going to talk to our next guest. I've got a shout out here for Fiona Stevens of HR Services and Support.
Hello,
Fiona, Princess Fiona. This is Princess Fiona.
Fiona of the People Platform.
Yeah,
Hello.
Of the People Platform. Shout out, please. Strategic HR, organisational development, experts in all things people and business. Thank you, she says. So that's an absolute pleasure. It is a pleasure now to welcome our last guest of the day and our next guest for the very first time, Margaret Connolly. Now, Margaret's a tax expert. These days, she's an independent tax expert, having worked for many years in many big accounting firms. Margaret, welcome to the Business Bunker Show. It's an absolute pleasure to meet you. We're going to talk about the work that you do, but I know that you also do a lot of stuff outside of work in terms of running around like a mad thing, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. But just start off by giving us a background to you, you would.
First of all, I'd like to say thank you very much for inviting me onto the show, folks. It's an absolute pleasure.
Clearly a local lass.
Yes, very.
I've got to tell you, sorry to interrupt so early into this. You might guess where Margaret's origins are in Forsyth, round about Stirling. Yeah. And she has just been asked to represent England.
In an international marathon.
Yeah.
Which I will do with great pride on the 8th of October this year. It's part of the Chester Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm part of I'm representing England in the Masters Marathon team.
Cool.
And Masters basically means people over the age of 35.
Mm-hmm. So we're assuming Nicola's got her on a blacklist now.
Yeah.
For that.
I hope so.
sorry to interrupt that. So do start again, Margaret. Tell us a bit about your background, because somebody asked me about you, and I said this lady has basically memorized all 12,000 pages of the tax code and has them in her head because she's got a brain like a planet. A bit of a tax specialist, really, aren't you?
I'm afraid I am, Paul. And I was born in Stirling in Scotland, and I grew up in a small town called Scythe, and then I went to Glasgow University and done a maths degree, and I loved maths. I didn't know what to do.
But you did a degree in pure maths?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't sure what to do, but I always really wanted to come to London. So I decided I would try and get into the London School of Economics, to do a postgrad. And it was I didn't know whether to do law or accounting and finance, and I ended up doing accounting and finance. Loved London. I met some amazing people at the LSE from all over the world. That was just fabulous.
This will make you laugh. This will make you laugh, yeah. Because my highest qualification in life is 50 yards breaststroke, at which I cheated to get it because I had one foot on the floor. But I'm actually a guest lecturer at the LSE on the MBA program.
Oh, right. Wow.
I just thought I'd let you know how standards have slipped since your day. I'll just say that basically.
Oh, yes. I qualified as a chartered accountant, so I'm a fellow of the Institute of Chartered Accountants in England and Wales. I trained with PricewaterhouseCoopers in London, and I spent 20 years overall in the city. I had an absolutely amazing time. I worked with probably some of the brightest brains in the profession. Spent 3 years as head of domestic tax at Unilever, and that was brilliant, being able to stand in the shoes of the client, and it got me to realise that I could actually stand up and face the revenue, and I still prefer face-to-face meetings today with the revenue than anything else, you know. I then went to KPMG again. I worked with some phenomenal people there, but we had moved. I'd got married and we'd moved to Kent, and I'd got myself a few horses. I used to get up at 4 in the morning to ride before jumping on the train. And then I decided to move local. So early 2002, I took a partnership with a firm. They're now called Creston Reeves. So I was a tax partner and head of tax there for 13 years. Most of the work I was doing, increasingly, it was amazing working in Kent, because whilst being in the city, I was dealing with a lot of big multinationals and doing a fair amount of cross-border international tax planning, which, for the avoidance of doubt, in my world, does not mean avoiding tax. It means making sure you're not paying it in more than one country.
I want to talk about this in a minute, because there's nothing more guaranteed to drive me nuts than some of the complete nonsense in the press about tax. But we'll come back. Don't let me interrupt, but I'm going to have a rant in a minute, don't worry.
I moved to Kent early 2002, and much to my surprise, I mean, I got involved with some real pure quality clients in Kent, some fairly big chunky Kent companies, mostly owner managed businesses. I particularly enjoy advising that sort of company, being involved with the family and issues like succession planning or partitions, you know, even mergers with other businesses, there's quite a lot of synergies. But I realised over the years that what I was enjoying more than anything, because you may have worked out, I actually quite like talking. And I'm now independent. I'm Margaret Connolly Tax and Business Consulting Limited. So I probably do 50% tax, 50% strategic advice to companies. Mostly family businesses. I don't have a website. I don't have business cards. I don't know how to do Twitter. What I do know how to do is have face-to-face meetings. I'm good. I'm fairly good. I can think on my feet. I can have ideas. I detest admin. I can't type to save myself. So I've got a virtual secretary. She's formerly KPMG. And as soon as I finish a meeting, I can dictate onto my phone and send it to her. And she probably takes 1 hour to do what it would take me 10 hours. But anyway, clients don't pay me to type or to make notes or to do all this admin, you know. So I stick. I only work part-time now. I retired from my position at Reeves at the end of December 2014. Because I'd also always wanted to get involved in more than just the tax, i.e. the strategy. So that's what I tend to do now, and I stick to the face-to-face meetings, having the ideas, getting someone to put the ideas together, and occasionally taking second opinions. I do have, obviously, some connections, some alliances with other organisations. For example, sometimes I'm involved at the moment. I've got three fairly large, well-known Kent companies where I am the strategic advisor to. If clients do want other advice like audits, then I've got close links with a really good firm of auditors, accountants in Canterbury. If they want accounting and R&D, I've got good links with RIFT. I've just got various links, and I do find it works quite well for me, because an awful lot, when you're in a firm of accountants, clients will sometimes be suspicious and think that, okay, you're doing tax, but they think, oh, you've probably got targets to sell other services, you know.
Sure.
But I just prefer to do my own thing and to work for myself, because I'm not. I don't do timesheets, and I don't have to work out charge my time by the hour. I really do enjoy what I do still. It's all I've ever done. To me, tax is fun.
Because there's that old joke about consultants. I used to be a management consultant, so it was the same kind of thing. There's an old joke about consultants. You know, consultant dies and goes to heaven and he's met by St. Peter and he's going, oh, you've arrived eventually. Now you're 467. He's got, I'm not. I'm 83. He's not according to your timesheets. You're not.
it's just the more internal admin. But I guess I can fully appreciate that, you know, firms with lots of staff have to do it to keep tabs on people and clients and what's been done. But I just like the freedom of being me, you know, and doing what I want to do and doing the strategy. And I do spend a lot of time with them. One of the things I think I've always loved doing is you get contacted. Somebody has maybe recommended me and you get in there and they say, oh, we want to implement a share option scheme because they've heard about it, they've read about it. And you know, it would be so easy just to think, oh, yeah, okay, let me tell you how much time I might spend doing this and advising them. But I will tend to invest a lot more time in finding out, is that really what they want to do?
Yeah, exactly.
Talking, why do you want to do it? Finding out, having individual face-to-face meetings with different shareholders, because invariably they've got different aspirations, different ambitions. They've got different succession issues. They're not the same age. And so you may even have a company, they'll be four shareholders, and they'll think, oh, we want to sell. But sit them all down one by one and think, get them to tell, well, what are you going to do once you sell? What are you going to do? And often it will be, somebody has mentioned it would be a good idea to sell at the moment because they can take advantage of entrepreneurs' relief and pay capital gains tax at 10%. And you think, yeah, well, fine, but what have you thought about what you're going to do after it? Have you thought about if you've got shares in a trading company, if anything unforeseen happens and you die, they may be exempt from inheritance tax as a business asset. If you convert them into cash, et cetera, they won't be. So you need to give
them
the...
That's how people's eyes glaze over. Tell us what to do.
Yeah.
But you've got to really make sure.
That's where... I want to come in as a businessman, and some of the things that drive me nuts when people that know nothing about it start telling you about tax and about who isn't paying what. The thing that drives me biggest nut, you don't have to comment on this because this is libelous what I'm about to say. There's a certain newspaper group, the Daily Mail, okay, that has a habit of printing the same thing over and over again. And considering their tax affairs aren't exactly, you know, what they're claiming to be, they ought not to do this, but they do it, and it drives me nuts every time. When people start talking about tax avoidance, it's always avoidance, it's never evasion, because that's a criminal activity. Uh-huh. Yeah. When they start talking about big corporation tax avoidance, and I'm no apologist for big corporations, but this does drive me nuts, they'll always put XYZ, Amazon or whatever, had revenues of 80 billion. You do not pay corporation tax on revenues. You pay it on profit. And until you start to recognise that, it's meaningless. It is just, it's just the media winding people up. Because once you start to understand that it's paid on a profit, you then start to understand how and why they pay the tax they do or don't. Yeah. And that's not to say that there aren't some ways of moving stuff around, and we got into a whole thing about transfer pricing and stuff like that within the European Union that people were doing, various coffee shops and what have you. But on the whole, with international companies, international law, I think I'm right in this, says you can't pay tax in two jurisdictions. You have to pay tax in one. The fact that they don't pay it here doesn't mean to say they don't pay it somewhere. Yeah. Anyway, rant over. Sorry about that. I had to get that off my chest. Yeah.
It is a whole minefield, the tax now, and even, you know, the leading up to the election last week, there was all this great big hullabaloo about the UK was now paying, you know, the rates of corporation tax were similar to those in tax haven countries. Mm. And that says maybe, and that's right. But, you know, the background to that was several years ago when Ireland really reduced its headline rate of corporation tax.
12%, yeah.
An awful lot of UK businesses were either moving their manufacturing operations over to Ireland, so there was a loss of jobs. So there was a lot of pressure put on the UK government then to bring them down. But if you look more closely, the headline rate of corporation tax, it has fallen, but the other allowances and offsets, like the rates of capital allowances, they've got a much lesser. And if you actually sat with two lots of numbers and done the detailed arithmetical calculations, when we were 32% as against 20%, okay, it is a bit low overall, but it's not a glaring 12%. So
the interesting thing was when they last lowered the corporation tax rate, they actually generated more in revenue, more in tax revenue from a lower rate. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. You know, just because it's not as simple as you know, because it's so our tax system is so complex. Margaret, how many pages are there in the tax code at the moment, roughly?
I've lost count, Paul. Yeah. I've lost count. It's just I really have to be keeping so up to date. Now there's so much anti-avoidance as well. You know, I was dealing with one of my clients last week, and innocently he was about to try and prop up one of his subsidiaries. He was going to put a huge loan of his own personal funds in, and I'm thinking, actually, if it ends up irrecoverable and it's written off, that could trigger a 19% corporation tax in the company. And he may, if he's lucky, get a capital loss, but he's got nothing to offset it with, you know. Mm-hmm. So my job, I've never actually advised on any tax avoidance schemes. I'm pleased to say in a 35-year career, up till today, I've never had anything that the revenue have not accepted, because I'm in the business. Well, I want to sleep at night, and I work on the assumption that my clients want to sleep at night. Mm. And I don't want to ever go selling a client some and saying I'll charge a percentage, because, you know, to me, for me, it doesn't sit comfortably. Yeah. But there's so much change going on in the world of tax now, and even like all the non-domiciliaries. I mean, one of the a couple of excellent chaps in the firm in Canterbury that I'm this Mike. It tends to do with a lot of non-domiciliaries, and they announced last year there was going to be an awful lot of changes, and so clients are trying to amend their affairs. And then because of Brexit and the announcement of the snap election, they pulled all this legislation that was expected to go through this year. So it keeps everybody on their toes, you know. But you get a lot of it's almost like you know it's not really you don't really want to tell many people that, you know, you're a tax advisor these days, because I don't think people have got a very high opinion of it.
No, they haven't. And that's one of the things that I find so disappointing in the overall thing. I mean, for me, I'm perfect. I don't even have an ISA. She'll punch me. I don't even have an ISA. Yeah. And I've never had an ISA. Yeah. Don't look at me like that.
I couldn't look at you, however, it's radio.
I couldn't care less. I just...
Actually, if it's any consolation, neither have I.
Yeah, good. I believe we should pay the tax that's due, and as a society, we can't fund anything if we don't pay our taxes, and it's as simple as that. It, you know, that's what we're all here to do. Unfortunately, the politicians have made the tax code so horrifically complex that it isn't even that you're trying to avoid things. Mm. It's you're trying to get it right. You're trying to work out what on earth to do in terms of how you do it. You know, I owned a small company that had flat rate VAT. Mm. Yeah. And everybody's going, oh, that's lovely. And all of a sudden everyone went, oh, no, you don't want to do that. You know, why? Well, because they've changed this and this. And you look at it and you're losing loads and loads of money because it changed one week from the next. Mm. You know, just
it
simple stuff.
So common. I mean, I have never ever worked with a firm of accountants, or I've never worked with anybody that they've been trying to avoid. They've been advising clients to, I would call it tax dodging or tax skullduggery.
Yeah.
I have never actually personally known anyone that's been in that business.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, people, I think it's just due to ignorance or lack of understanding or lack of awareness, whatever. They don't appreciate, you know, the world of the tax advisor. Yeah, there are a minority out there that are flogging tax avoidance schemes, you know, and they don't have a much understanding of tax.
Mm.
But our paths don't tend to meet. You know, firms of chartered accountancy are so regulated.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
They don't tend to get involved in that sort of stuff, you know. And I certainly, you know, as I said earlier, you know, I want to sleep at night, you know, and we've got to be whiter and white with the revenue ourselves, any accountants, tax advisors. So, I love what I do, and I've got hobbies and stuff.
Well, we're very fast running out of time, Margaret, and I just want you to tell us about that, because that fascinates me as well. You know, the world of tax is a very cerebral, complex, and you're a very knowledgeable lady on that. Uh-huh. And then at the weekend, you go running for miles.
I run most days. Well, I was a horse rider for years, Paul, but my big horse, Jock,
How did she think of a name like that?
After Jock's, Dallas fan.
From lots of little nephews that supported Glasgow Celtic, and there was this great manager.
Jock Wallace.
Jock Steen.
Oh, Jock Steen.
So my horse, I'm afraid, is called after Jock Steen. I have another horse called William Wallace, yes. But so I had to retire. I also had one called Jimmy Boyle.
Hold on a minute. They've let her represent England. How did that happen?
Because I'm resident and domiciled in England and Wales. Even that's how my will starts as well. No, I've been here for 38 years. I run with an English club, South Kent Harriers. Hi there, South Kent Harriers. And I got into running when I had to give up horse riding just as a bit of exercise. And I was not, let's just say, I'm not bad for my age. I do like it. I never get tired. I never get sore legs. So I got into doing marathons 2 years ago, done three last year, and got a 3:56 at Chester, and got an email that I had been selected to run for England, and I genuinely thought it was a joke, but it was serious. But it'll be a real honour and a real privilege, you know. And yes, I live here, I've always worked here, I've always paid my taxes in England.
and she hasn't got an ISA either.
And I haven't got an ISA. And so I'd sooner, I'm afraid to say, I feel as if I should run for England, and it'll be a pleasure to run for England rather than Scotland. But yeah, and I'm glad. I'm not really in a great fan of this referendum to have devolution. And I think if anything positive did come out of last week's result, I think maybe the Scottish Nationalists may sort of hold their horses on that one. So.
Sure.
So that might be good.
Their horse is called Jock.
And their horse is called Jock. William Wallace, yeah. yeah. And Rabbi Burns, yeah. Okay, yeah. Margaret, thank you. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show. We ought to say, because we didn't let her in as punishment for being late.
I don't think I can get a word in anyway.
Yeah, no. we've got a very short amount of time. But thank you to Annette Byrne of Rift Accounting for introducing us to Margaret. You work closely with Margaret,
we
and
do, it. Don't we? Yeah. We do, and we have great fun doing so.
We have great fun doing so.
We certainly it's, do.
Just give us a quick 30 seconds on where we are with Rift, what you're up to, how's it going, update.
Rift continues to be really, really busy, growing fast. We've got loads going on. We've obviously got the Kiba dinner next week.
Oh, I'm so excited,
Margaret.
Evening dinners.
You're up for an award, aren't you?
You're
presenting award.
We sponsor one of the awards, so we've got the Kiba dinner next Thursday. That's one of our annual trips now, isn't it, Margaret? We enjoy that one. So that's really good. Looking forward to that, because it's so many great businesses in the room that night. We always have a great fun evening, and it's great to see new businesses entering the awards and winning, and we've got some customers that are also up for awards, so looking forward to that. Apart from that, it's all very much business as usual. I love introducing my clients to Margaret because
you always bring us fascinating guests.
I bring you a real variety, but I didn't know she had a William Wallace horse, so we'll discuss that again.
Hasn't everyone?
No, apparently not. I have got an ISA, just for the record. I'll be the one off.
Well, it's her then.
It's me. I am the only one. But I'm not old enough to have, was it the PEP before?
Oh, the PEP.
ISA.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
Yeah,
showing your age. Yeah, imagine that. No, but all good, thank you. And I've got a great guest for you again next month.
Have you?
I'll tell you about
you
it.
You get surpassed yourself.
Every month.
Blimey.
I surpass myself.
Nettie, thank you so
you
much
are
for
very
that.
Welcome.
Sorry to restrict you. We had a busy
fascinating
show today.
Listening to
yeah,
guys,
to yeah. Margaret. Just to let you know what's coming up on Channel Radio for the rest of today. At 4 o'clock, we have the lovely Natalie Benaig with the Kent Creative Live Show. And on her show today, Natalie, that's at 4 p.m. She has jewellers, silversmiths, and goldsmiths from an organisation called Precious Kent. For those of you that don't know, the Kent Creative Show covers all things creative in the county, from art through jewellery and all kinds of creative stuff. And this week she's talking to the lovely folks from Precious Kent. At 5 o'clock we have Mr. Craig Avery, he of the stripy socks, the ladies' favourite. Mr. Avery will bring you 2 hours of music and celebrity interviews. At 7 p.m. we have the Rockabilly Show with Mr. Joey Whaler. At 9 p.m, for some bizarre reason, we still have I Was Lord Kitchener's Valet, which is a show that is entirely focused on 1967. I have no idea why. I have no idea how we keep it going each week, but we manage to, and we have different music every week from 1967. Why we pick 1967, I have no idea.
That's the year we started.
Well, it's clearly in tribute to Abbeyfield, Kent, is it not? That is obviously it. Yeah.
I did listen once. There is a story to it, but I can't.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then, as always, on a Tuesday night, we finish off with.
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
Full drum beat and a squidgy bass, I give you Vanilla Ace and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
It's 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
So, as always, on a Tuesday evening here on Channel Radio, we finish off with the Club Culture Show with the wonderful Mr. Boy George at 10 o'clock. Well, that's it. We've reached the end of another show. I'd just like to say a massive, massive thank you to my co-host, the famous Joe Dodds.
Thank you.
Our guest, Mr. Clive Empson of Clive Empson Auctions. And you can see Clive here from Clive at 9:50 tomorrow at the Grow Kent Show at the Great Danes Hotel just outside Maidstone. A fabulous thank you for his first appearance on the show, Mr. Bruce Kidd from Oasis. We also met Leon Steer from Abbeyfield, Kent.
Thank you.
And last but not least, we heard from the wonderful Margaret Connolly, independent tax advisor, England marathon runner, and owner of a load of horses with strange Scottish names. Thank you so much for joining us. A big thank you to Phoenix Interim Recruitment, who sponsored today's show. We will be back with you all next week with another big Business Bunker show. The listen again, for those of you that need it, will be up shortly, and you can listen to the listen again on the radio. Keep your emails and tweets coming. Use the hashtag BBunker. We will join you all next week. Don't forget to have a quick gawp at my Facebook page, Paul Andrews, with our Facebook live stream on it from earlier on with the pre-show show. But we'll be back with you next week on the Business Bunker Show for another lineup of interesting guests, business topics, and emails and tweets. But for the moment, thank you so much for joining us all. We'll be back next week. Have a fantastic week, and we will see you all soon. Bye for now.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.